Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Greg Baer, the co-author of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids. This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. On today's episode, I'm talking with Anna Hamayoun, an author, school advisor, and early career development expert who works at the intersection of executive functioning skills, technology, and personal energy management. She's been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and more, and she's the author of four books, including Social Media Wellness, The Myth of the Perfect Girl, and most recently, Erasing the Finish Line, The New Blueprint for Success Beyond Grades and College Admissions. Anna, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here.
So let's start with your latest book, Erasing the Finish Line. You've written that for years, quote, "We've been led to believe that great grades, high test scores, and college acceptance are the key to a successful life. Yet our laser focus on these achievements leaves students feeling anxious, demoralized, and unprepared." When did you first begin to notice this in students, and how are these feelings showing up?
I've been working with students now for over two decades, and so many of them are middle school, high school, and college students. And I kept seeing the same thing over and over again in my office, where students would get so stressed around the college admissions process and feel as though they had to behave in a certain way. They had to look, act, and be. And that's really just become even more amplified in the world of social media and getting all of this information from everywhere. So it's not that it didn't exist before, but it's become amplified, and we as adults don't often know all the things kids are consuming around how they should look, act, and be. And so that has made it even more challenging for parents, educators, and students alike.
And in our push to make sure our own kids are at least, if not better prepared for life after school than their peers are, in many ways, we're achieving the absolute opposite effect. So help us make sense. What constitutes preparedness now? And is it different from what preparedness meant for you and me and many of our listeners when we were back in school?
Well, one of the things I did in Erasing the Finish Line was go revisit my students from 15 to 20 years ago and share their stories alongside students that I have today. I think many of the basics are the same, but our world is obviously different. My students who from 15 to 20 years ago didn't have 30 different ways that they were dealing with messages coming in and so much information that they were trying to filter. They weren't navigating the after effects of maybe being online for school for 18 months. You know, there's four pillars in the book: systems, connection, perspective, and acceptance. And I talk about those as fundamental underlying skills that all students need and young adults need to thrive in and outside of the classroom. And those haven't changed, but how we approach them, how we support students in developing those skills in our new ever-changing world, maybe has.
And so much of what you call this new blueprint for success is based on executive functioning skills. So for our listeners who maybe don't use that phrase every single day, can you just explain what executive functioning skills are?
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to recognize that I've been talking about this for over 15 years. My first book, That Crumpled Paper, was due last week, Helping Disorganized and Distracted Boys, was all about helping students organize, plan, prioritize, start and complete tasks, and be adaptable thinkers. And yet, I never use the term executive functioning skills because it's relatively new to the academic lexicon. But it's really the idea of the skills that you need to think about that are not automatic. Many of the things are around organizing, planning, prioritizing, starting and completing tasks, and being adaptable. And it's also around inhibitory control. So how do you control your impulses? And also your working memory. So how do you make connections between things that you're learning from different spaces and bring them together to support you? We often think of executive functioning skills or organization and time management as key to academic success or even professional success. we don't realize in a time where the Surgeon General has talked about loneliness as an epidemic or about how social media has really had some challenges, that actually inhibitory control is also really about connection and forging a sense of belonging, which is related to a lot of the work that you talk about, which is why I'm so excited. One of the many reasons I'm so excited to talk to you today.
And you write about the need to build what a lot of folks call social capital and to foster genuine connections. And that's not something that, at least historically, our schools have pursued as goals. So how are kids supposed to do this? And where should they and maybe their parents, families, and caregivers be looking for opportunities to help them build that social capital and form the relationships that they crave so much?
It's such a great question and such a key part of my book, where oftentimes people have not spoken about this. But what I have found in my work over the last two decades with thousands of students is when they come out of high school, when they come out of college and they're trying to find a job, it's really like, this person introduced me to this person. I met this person somewhere. I mean, just last week, I was on a plane to Austin and I was sitting next to a young man who had just graduated from college, and he told me about his job that was based in Philadelphia. He was working remotely. And I asked him, how did you end up getting this job, right? He didn't come from a family that had a lot of connections. He had explained that to me. And he said, well, I'm friends with these groups in college, and I helped this girl that I'm friends with move out of her dorm room, and her dad met me. And then 2 years later, he passed my name along to the company he works at. And so this idea of modeling openness and curiosity within our own relationships is an important place to start. And also identifying the ways that we can pursue interests that are not immediate in our community. This is especially important for those seeking social or economic mobility. Knowing many people from many different backgrounds increases our chances of developing social capital. And we often don't realize that everybody has social capital. No matter where you're born, you have some semblance of social capital, and it often depends on the context. In a certain neighborhood, that one person might be the person you always want to go and see. And yet in this community, these other people might have a different element of social capital. So I always encourage parents and educators to find something to do together in their immediate or nearby community that doesn't overlap with people you already know, that might closely encourage you to expand the people you encounter every day. That seems simple, but often in our worlds that have become even more and more insular, it's not.
Anna, sometimes it's just noticing who's around you, right? I think about a vignette that my co-author Ryan and I share in our book. We had interviewed Valerie Kinlock, who's currently the president of a historically Black college in North Carolina. And she had shared with us her experience growing up in Charleston, South Carolina. I imagine she was doing decently in school at the time, but wasn't terribly enamored. And she said, I fell in love with learning when I began to realize that the women sitting on the stoop in my neighborhood were like books, and they had stories and wisdom to share. And as soon as I started listening, I fell in love with learning. Those people are all around us. There's a sensibility that, as Fred Rogers would have said, everyone has something worth giving, that there's wisdom all around us, and we need to look for it. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And I love the way you said that and tied it all together. Because the key is, you know, a lot of people think of social capital as transactional, but it's really relationships and really going in with this non-transactional, non-judgmental, open-ended way of listening and being part of your community and engaged in a way that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. Just like this young man who shared with me how he got this job. He was just helping out a friend move out. He didn't go into this saying, oh, well, maybe I can get a job out of it after school. And it's all about, how are we engaged in our community? How are we learning from others? How are we being supportive of those that might be in need? And how are we open and curious within our new relationships and others?
Anna, in introducing yourself, I spoke to the intersection of your work of executive functioning skills, technology, and personal energy management. And I'm really interested in this idea of students identifying their energy profiles. And this goes back to your expertise in personal energy management. So what is an energy profile, and how does it help learners manage their energy effectively?
Well, one of the things I have always talked about is helping students identify what energizes them, what drains them, and how they recharge. And that seems simple, but in a world where they're often told that they should have these really busy schedules, where they're coming home late at night and then do work, it's really feeling like the sense of overwhelm and impossibility for a lot of our students where that might not match where they're energized, where they're drained, and how they're recharged. So in the book, I give an example of my friend who went to New York with her son, and her son would be classified as an orchid in that idea of the orchid and the dandelion, that book. She is there and she's such an extrovert, and she had planned their schedule from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., like go, go, go. And by the middle of the first day, she texts me and she goes, "My son is about ready to have a meltdown, and he's told me that he wants to go back home." And I said, "Well, you know, New York is pretty overstimulating. Have you given him downtime?" And she knows her son so well. But it was this moment of, in her excitement of, we're going on this trip, it's mother-son to New York, she had forgotten what her son's energy profile is. And I feel like when I talk about this in audiences around the country to parents and caregivers, I see them look at each other, these couples look at each other being like, oh my gosh, this is the hidden thing. You know, if you're in a family where people have different energy profiles, right? You have that child who can go, go, go. Or you have that parent who really needs time to recharge. It can be different with this push-pull. And one of the pillars of the book is around acceptance of your energy profile and figuring out where you have the most energy. And for students, that's where they should do their work. If somebody's exhausted at the end of the day, getting anything done is going to take that much longer. So thinking about how you can reduce that exhaustion, but also how you can support this recharge before you get exhausted.
Anna, if you could see me smiling, or if my wife could jump to this podcast, she'd say yes. He's the Energizer Bunny, and he sometimes forgets about the rest of us and the places from which we draw energy and what we need to do. It's a lesson that I think each of us continuously learns. This is Greg Bear. I'm talking with Anna Homayoun, an author, school advisor, and early career development expert. Anna, in incredibly practical, meaningful, personal ways, you help students, parents, and educators apply a lot of the skills and mindsets about which we're talking. Can you tell us about that work? What does it look like?
So it really depends. So much of our work is really focused on the student who walks in our office and over Zoom, actually. We work with students on three continents. We start with this idea of a 90-minute organizational workshop, and the idea there is that it's interactive, it's one-on-one, and it really helps the student identify what motivates them personally, what are the things that they would like to accomplish for themselves, whether that's getting more sleep, getting work done on time, and we focus on daily habits and routines, so we don't focus on grades. And we also focus on the idea of energy profiles that, based on your life circumstances, you might be experiencing grief or injury or illness, to really focus on who you are and where you're at right now. And this idea of, are you doing the best you can with what you've got? And when we do that, it's really empowering for students and thinking about how do we help you develop daily habits and routines that will move you towards your own goals, not your parents or your caregivers, not your teachers, not mine, yours. And for a lot of students, that's the first time they've had a conversation like that. People are often so ready to equate well-being with how a kid is doing academically in school or test score-wise, right? So an example, I had two students a couple weeks ago, back-to-back, who came in. One had this monster energy drink and was like, "Oh, I'm not sleeping, I'm anxious, and I don't eat breakfast, and I take 3-hour naps." And so I was like, okay, well, let's talk about how you're managing your energy throughout the day before we even talk about how we're organizing, planning, and prioritizing. And that allowed this student to just really reflect rather than coming from a place of judgment or shame of like, hey, is this working for you? And then another student, again, you know, we did the same sort of thing. And 3 weeks later, she came back and she says, "You know, now I'm eating breakfast. I actually decided to not drink caffeine anymore," which was surprising to me. I had never told her not to do that, right? We talked about daily habits. And then I don't have to take those naps anymore. So it's about those habits that tie into the fundamentals of supporting executive functioning skills, rather than starting with the grades, test scores, or, you know, where do you want to go to college? Because that is not where we want to focus. We want to focus on the daily habits and routines.
And Anna, it's not just the kids. You also advise employers and corporations, helping them to meet today's young people, their employees, where they are. So let's talk about that. What are today's young people bringing to the workplace, and what are they not bringing?
I want to say that a lot of Gen Zers are bringing amazing ideas. You know, my staff, some of whom are in that cohort, have fabulous ideas that we really should be open to because they're close to so many things that we may not be. So they're navigating how to manage work and life in a different way, and they may not have been exposed to some of the things that we may take for granted. So what I have found is many benefit from more time, structure, and support to build those workflow strategies, which there's a win-win all the way around. Because if you learn these workflow strategies, you can have the daily habits and routines that support getting things done in a less stressful way.
If you allow, Anna, I want to take a personal turn. I am a girl dad. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask you about another book that you wrote, The Myth of the Perfect Girl. And in that book, you offer strategies for overcoming something that so many girls and young women experience. That is the need to live up to other people's standards of success. Mm. Can you give us a taste of some of those strategies?
Sure. And I think it's really important to step back and say that I wrote that book in 2012. And when I went back and looked at some of the things, it's like it's all been amplified, right? Because Instagram was barely a thing. TikTok didn't exist. And yet I was talking about the fact that these girls were going online and they were in these spaces that were often anonymous and getting messages of how to look, act, and be. And so the key thing for me is really to help every girl step back and figure out what they are consuming. What are the things that are coming into their lives? So as parents, say you have an older child who might be on Instagram or TikTok, who are they following? You know, what's in their feed? What do you want to opt into? And what do you want to filter out? So that first step is feeling like you have a choice in how and when you spend your time online or in real life. And then the next piece is really figuring out what are the things that bring you social and emotional well-being? Who are the supporters, those peers that offer you support? I think we don't often help all students, particularly girls, talk about how to make and maintain friendships with people who are supportive. The reality show relationships that have happened over the last two decades have really altered the way we look at friendships, in addition to the way that the word friend has been co-opted by so much social media. Like, our friend is our plumber. Our friend is someone we met once. Our friend is our best friend from fifth grade. Like, we don't know that term friend. So helping them also be thinking of what is a supportive friend, and that I can opt into energizing friendships and I can opt out of experiences that are draining or minimize the impact on my life. And that is a really important place to start. We also want to make sure that every young person has multiple trusted adults that we trust. And this is really interesting because when I traveled around for social media wellness, I found out that at every school, no matter how big or small, public, private, independent, that 5 to 10% of students at every school I visited, students didn't have a trusted adult they felt they could turn to if something uncomfortable happened online or in real life. And so that third piece is really, as parents, as caregivers, as educators, how do we make sure that every child that comes within our sphere has trusted adults that we trust?
Which is so critical when we think about this rapidly changing world, socially, technologically, and otherwise. The thing that remains constant, what's timeless and classic, is that role of caring adults and the deep, caring, authentic relationships to which we can turn for the support when we need it. Anna, we've been having a lot of fun closing these conversations with a bit of a lightning round, right? To get to know you a little bit more. So are you ready for a rapid-paced lightning round of fun questions?
Oh my goodness, I am so ready. I'm so excited.
Okay, first things that come to mind. Describe Anna's energy profile.
Oh, energized by people, but also need a lot of downtime.
What do you do to recharge?
I read, I work out, and I walk my dogs without my phone.
Your favorite part of the Duke Gardens in Durham, North Carolina?
Oh, that's the children's area by far. I love that area. But I love every part of the Duke Gardens, quite frankly.
Anna, how can people find out more about the work that you're doing?
Well, they can visit my website, annahomayoun.com, and erasingthefinishline.com will also take you there if that's easier. And yeah, I'd love to stay connected to those who are interested.
And Anna, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I love that question. And I would say to ask open-ended questions without judgment, because kids often have answers within them, and it's always exciting to see them discover those.
Thanks again to Anna Homayoun. Her latest book is Erasing the Finish Line, the new blueprint for success beyond grades and college admissions. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.